James, welcome again to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Thank you, Vahe.
James, this program is about identity. And before we start, what is identity?
Well, in academia, amongst anthropologists and sociologists, they have a number of different attempts to define what identity is. Broadly speaking, identity involves the way people see their place in the world in reference to other people. So in one level, your identity is defined by against other people as who you are not. So you see other people as being different from you, but at the same time also defined by similarities that you have with other people. It's something that emerges from a very early age where different aspects of identity, such as gender, nationality, ethnicity, class, tribal group in some instances, racial group in some instances, are defined, and a religious identity emerges and sectarian identity. And it's usually in reference to those around you. So those that you build connection to, of course, family is where it starts, and those that you define yourself as being different from. That's essentially how it happens. And of course, in an official level, national identity is the most important aspect in modern societies when you're traveling between countries, and it's defined by things such as passports, etc. The interesting aspect is very often national identity is not that important for people, even though they might ascribe to it, but also they have to keep in mind that there are different identities that they hold. And really, it depends on circumstance and position what identity people emphasize. So when someone is with a group of people of the opposite gender, they're more strongly aware of what their gender is, for example. Similarly, if you're at a social gathering of lawyers and you're not a lawyer, then that is an aspect of your identity. And the same is true with ethnic and linguistic groups, that you see yourself as being either alike or different from people. And sometimes you might see yourself as different, but at the same time recognize a bonding similarity in religion or something else. So essentially, identity is a series of components, sometimes described as the genes of the soul. And people, the important aspect of it is that even though we all have these multiple identities that at different times we emphasize or distance ourselves from, for all of us, we see these aspects as firmly fixed, as unchangeable. In reality, they can be quite fluid and they can change. A perfect example would be, say, a man from Sarajevo. I know that there's a philosopher, a French philosopher, a Lebanese-French philosopher, Amin Maalouf, who gives this example of a man he knew from Sarajevo who in the 80s saw himself as a Yugoslavian, in the 90s saw himself as a Bosnian, and by the 2000s he was seeing himself more as a Muslim or a European Muslim. So it can change over time, but the important thing is within people's mind, this stays the same.
And identity need to have a homeland? So you have gypsies, aborigines in Australia, nomads, you know, travel from one place to the other.
Generally speaking, there is a geographic component to all identity. With gypsy people, I'm not too familiar with what their ideas are of their identity. I know in Ireland they are essentially Irish, but I know that in other countries, such as England and European countries, they have their origin in India, although they've been living in Europe for more than 1,000 years. However, with Aboriginal people, they do have a concept of homeland, which is the territory they recognise as theirs. Even if they moved around from summer camp to winter camp, even if they moved with the seasons, and even if their land crossed the land of others, they had a very clear idea of what was their land, and it was sacralised in their own religious beliefs. And to the point where, quite interestingly and a little bit controversially, sometimes people argue that Aboriginal communities in the major cities are essentially a diaspora because they maintain a link with an Indigenous homeland or an idea of where they come from or an ethnic group within Aboriginality, but they live outside of that. And they do maintain links with other Aboriginal people, of course, because in the colonial era, the term Aboriginal was invented to describe all people living in the continent at the time. The other aspect about Indigenous identity that's interesting is that from the missionary period, they started to be described as nations. And this was defined in a religious sense, not in the way we think of nations as different countries with different states, But the idea is, the religious idea of a nation is a group of people who have common descent from a common ancestor. Now, the classic example is the nation of Israel. In the Bible, the Israelites all claim descent from the one person named Israel, or Jacob. So they took their name from that one man. The Armenians are the same. They call themselves Hai after their ancestor Haik, and they call their country Hayastan. Now, for the missionaries, when they noticed that different tribal groups of Aboriginal people had similar words or their languages related, they described these groups of tribes as a nation. So often you hear in Melbourne, people, when they acknowledge the traditional owners of Melbourne, they say the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This comes from the word for yes in the Wurundjeri language and related languages. The missionaries decided that they were all descended from the same ancestor because they had the word Kulin for yes, or variations of it. So there is always a strong geographic component to identity. Even in societies which move around, their relationship with the land that they move around on is very important. And it is how they define themselves. And within, I guess, Roma and Gypsy communities in Europe, the differences between them and those in other countries, Romania, Hungary, Czech Republic, are still important to them because the national identity has seeped in, particularly in the communist era.
Can there be a national identity in a multicultural society like Australia?
Yes, there can be a national identity within a country, a multicultural society like Australia. The very idea of multiculturalism, which began to be used here in the 70s, was an attempt to try and be more inclusive, less Anglo-centric, and try to build a national identity for which those that had migrated from non-English-speaking societies, as well as the Aboriginal community, could feel a part of. Now, the issue is, within a national identity, there are many regional identities. In a country like Australia, it's quite interesting that in some states, particularly Queensland, where I come from, and also Western Australia, the regional identity is actually much stronger, or not much stronger, but is stronger in comparison to the national identity. People in Queensland define themselves as Queenslanders first and foremost, and they then say, well, it goes without saying that a Queenslander is also an Australian. So it's not just ethnic background which defines identity in this case. The advantage of identities like Australian identity, which is really ambiguous because it's such a new country, is that it can be more inclusive than those which are defined by a great deal of history. I know that those Iranians that I know who were born in European countries, they tell me that they never have felt like they belong to the society. Mainly, for instance, in countries like Germany, the idea of being a German essentially comes from descent. It's your ancestry. So even if you are a German citizen, if you don't have German ancestry, sometimes national identity and belonging can be problematic. The same is true of many Middle Eastern countries. Well, Iran is a good example because the state has struggled to define what national identity is in a way that's been inclusive for all people. And additionally, when people think of their national identity, they actually are thinking of their ethnic identity. When Iranian Armenians talk about their nationality, they use the word Azg, or nation, and they mean their Armenianness, not their Iranianness. But in Australia, people tend to be a little bit more relaxed about it. It's not a perfect situation, of course, and in recent years we've seen a rise of those who've sought to redefine Australian identity along lines which suit their own agenda, such as along very Anglo-centric lines, people who define it by British history, which excludes probably about a quarter of the population that don't have British descent. They feel that they need to enforce this. And this is, in my feeling, is a result of globalization, wider awareness through the media, through the internet, that nationalities are different. Australians are traveling more. They're becoming more aware of different cultures around the world and different nations and how they work, and they seek to define themselves in relation to that. It's also a result of September 11 and the real questions that came around European and American and Australian identity in relation to what it is not, that came as a result of the terrorist attacks, that you see a rise of these more strong attempts to try and define exactly what an Australian is. But the reality is, A quarter of the population aren't born here, including myself. A large percentage of the population don't necessarily ascribe to an Anglo identity. So it's very difficult to, it would be very wrong, in fact, to take that form of identity and try to enforce it as the true Australian identity. I know that a lot of people complain that in television it's very Anglo-centric. There's a joke, I think it was Nassim Hussain made, that if you wake up in a hospital and all the doctors are white, then you need to get out of there because you're on the set of All Saints, you're not in a real hospital. But still, so there are still, of course, problems. But the multicultural identity has, to some extent, been developed to prevent wider ethnic tension within a multicultural society.
James, in modern times like today, when we talk about Anglo identities, does it include the Irish or just purely the British? Because there was so much tension between, you know, the British and the Irish.
Well, coming as someone from an Irish background, I don't see my identity as Anglo identity. I know there have been attempts to say Anglo-Celtic to be inclusive of Irish and also people who have Highland Scottish and Welsh background. For most people of Irish background, they probably wouldn't even think of the word Anglo as having any connection to them, or they wouldn't care. Though me as an intellectual, I think more deeply about it. The issue for a lot of Irish people was that their ethnic identity in Australia was defined by their religion. Up until the 60s, Australia was a deeply sectarian society where the differences between Catholics and Protestants were as such that certain industries would always be dominated by one or the other, and intermarriage was a very difficult process between the two groups. That's completely faded, and with that, Irish Australians have changed and probably become more essentially Australian than Irish. At the same time, they have been helped by the fact that there has been ongoing migration from Ireland to Australia, which has replenished the institutions and hasn't let up, particularly with the global financial crisis. The Anglo-Celtic identity is a false term as far as I'm concerned, because these are two separate things. There is no such thing as an Anglo-Celt. They're two separate ideas. The same as with Judeo-Christian. Gives a false idea that Judaism and Christianity are somehow alike, when in fact they interpret the same, they might use the same texts, but they interpret them entirely differently. However, it's interesting that the Anglo-Celtic identity has really been a byword for white Australians that is supposed to be inclusive of the large part who are from Britain and from Ireland. However, of course, most people who are from that background are pretty ambiguous towards the word Anglo-Celtic, and most people like myself who are Irish background don't like being lumped in with Anglos.
James, let's go to the Armenian. What's your perception about Armenian identity and Armenian national identity?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I was mentioning earlier, Armenian national identity differs from country to country, but in the terms of Middle Eastern communities, it's an ethnic identity. However, it's quite interesting because it's one of the older, as a national identity, it's one of the older ones. It's because, like the Israelite identity, it's a religious, it has its origins in religion, with the idea of the origin of Haik being the ancestor. But in particular, because the Armenian National Church, which developed over a period of around about 400 years, from about 400 AD until the Catholicos John of Odsun, who was in the 8th or 9th century, they essentially took on a lot of the responsibilities of developing a national church, one that was defined by language and a very ambiguous idea of what a homeland was, ambiguous in the sense that it had no specific borders, but it was centered in eastern Anatolia, South Caucasus area. They had a concept of it. And in times when the Armenian people had no kingdom or no state to represent them, they relied a lot on that church to continue to define that identity through language and also through exile in diaspora communities. The church essentially became the homeland. Now, in the 19th century, during a period of which is sometimes termed the Armenian Renaissance, of course, it began before that time, but it was really in full flight in Istanbul and Tbilisi in the 19th century, there started to be a real development of Armenian identity, somewhat inspired by European ideas, but also in concert with the modernization of Ottoman and Russian society. So you start seeing, for instance, the development of vernacularization of language. It's the origins of Western Armenian and Eastern Armenian, as opposed to using Grapar. You start to see the lessening of the role of the clergy in defining Armenian identity, but at the same time, Christianity or Armenian Christianity is put forward as the most important aspect. And then you start seeing the development of political groups who claim ownership of national identity, such as the Tashnak Sutyun, the Hunchak, the Ramgavar, and other groups, to be the protectors of Armenian people in diaspora and also calling for the development of a homeland. And this remains strong up until the genocide and after into the 20th century. One of the biggest changes that's happened, and it's happened very slowly, but it happened suddenly at the same time, was the independence of Armenia and the Karabakh War. This again has redefined Armenian identity. In the interviews I've done in Iran, it most commonly comes out as for those who grew up before the independence of Armenia, they had an idea that they had a homeland called Armenia, but it wasn't a geographically defined space. It was, as the church had always defined it, as this area in eastern Anatolia and the South Caucasus that had no borders but was where they came from. The change that Armenia has, independence has had, is that there is a country now called Armenia. There's also a country called Karabakh, which is strongly connected to Armenians as an Armenian country. So this has led them to reevaluate where they situate with Armenia. And of course, there are a lot of differences between higher estancias and diaspora Armenians. But increasingly, you see Armenians from the diaspora developing connections with the Republic of Armenia. Some of them have gone to live there. The vast majority simply go there to visit and be in an Armenian environment. So that's been a major change, because now Armenian national identity, well, it can be a citizenship at the same time as being an ethnicity. And that shows you how Armenian identity, like many identities, is constantly changing. But it still goes to the same essential motifs of, firstly, Armenian language, idea of Armenian religion and Christianity, and the idea of an Armenian homeland, which is tied to broader issues of culture and history that over the centuries Armenians have tied themselves to while continuing to reevaluate and redefine.
James, you studied for many years the Armenian community in Iran, and you traveled to Iran. But before getting into that subject, let's talk about Iranian and Persian identity. What are the differences, and is it correct to use the word Iranian and Persian interchangeably?
Mm-hmm. I've had a conversation with a number of people from, I guess, called linguistic and ethnic minorities in Iran about this issue. They all argue that they're Iranians, but that the term Iranian and Persian are not synonymous. This is a mistake that Persians, who speak who are the majority, make, that they feel that being Iranian and Persian is the same thing. But for those who are Azerbaijani speakers, Armenian speakers, speakers of Baluch, Kurdish, other languages, they disagree with. Now, there are those, of course, in those communities who do accept that Persian and Iranian are the same, and they are those who usually see themselves as having a very separate identity to Iran. But for the sake of argument, people such as Dr. Emilia Nersisyans, who's a professor of anthropology at Tehran University and herself an Iranian Armenian, she stated that she's an Iranian who speaks Armenian and is a Christian, as opposed to defining Iranians as primarily Persians and Shia. Now, this is because there's a whole debate going on in Iran that's been going on for at least 100 years about what are the components of Iranian identity. I've written about this in multiple areas, multiple articles, and I've put it down to there's two main arguments on opposite ends. There's what they call Iraniyat, or Iranianness, or Iranism, and Islamiyat, or Islamism. So is Iran an Islamic country, or is it an Iranian ethnically country? Now, these two things are not also separate from each other, because much of what people point to as being Iranian literature, particularly Persian language literature, is Islamic in nature, such as poets such as Rumi and Hafez are writing about Islamic themes. At the same time, many of the Islamists who are against the idea of ethnic identities because they see it as dividing the Ummah or the global Islamic community, they engage in Iranist language. A good example of that is the former foreign minister, Velayati, who stated that 50% of Islamic civilization is Iranian civilization, that the Iranians have contributed a great deal to the development of Islam. The same is true of Ahmadinejad's protege, Mashayi, a very controversial character, who caused a storm in Iran when he said that that Islam was given to the Arabs, but then God made sure that it came to Iran because he knew the Iranians would preserve it in its true and correct form. And this is quite humorous for some, but quite controversial for others in Iran. For it's particularly the Iranian sect of Shiism has developed as very distinct. And for this reason, Shiism is often seen as more Persian or more Iranian than it is seen as Islamic by some, not by all. And some Iranians say, we chose Shiism because the Arabs hate the family of the Prophet, and so we hated the Arabs, so that's why we chose that religion. From the perspective of religious minorities, what it's meant is that they have felt quite excluded, particularly under the time of the Islamic Republic, because the country has been defined primarily by religion. And because they haven't shared the religion of the state, they felt like they're foreigners in their own country. This is particularly true of Armenians, who already have a very formed idea of themselves. They would say to me, well, I'm not an Iranian. Some of them say, I'm not an Iranian because Iranians are Muslims and I'm a Christian, so I can't be Iranian. It's interesting that the current government in Iran of Rouhani has tried to deal with this a little bit. They've stopped using the term Akaliyat, meaning minority, to describe Armenians, and they've said we're going to call them Iranyani Ghere Musalman, which means non-Muslim Iranians. But it's interesting because I saw a number of Armenian leaders praise him for doing this, but when I spoke to the Armenian contacts I have in Iran about this, they didn't really care. They're like, oh, well, I guess I'm a minority. It doesn't really matter. So again, it really comes down to how people position themselves at a particular point in time. Sometimes when Iranian Armenians are talking to me, they are quite happy to emphasize their Iranian identity. But if they're around other Iranian Armenians, they're more likely to emphasize their Armenian identity. With case of being Persian, they themselves call Iranians Barsigner, meaning Persians. And there's a famous book by an Iranian Armenian author, Zoya Pirzad. The title of it escapes me at the moment. I think it's called The Day Before Easter is the Persian title. I'm not sure if it's been translated into English. But in that, it's a story about intermarriage between Armenians and non-Armenian Iranians. And in it, a woman is marrying an Azerbaijani Turk, and her family refers to him as the Persian, and he corrects them and says, oh, well, actually, I'm a Turk. And the woman has to explain to her fiancé that all Armenians call Iranians Persians. They don't know the difference between them. So there is a strong connotation, even in Armenian minds, between the idea of Persians and Iranians.
James, in the first chapter of your future book, you state that Armenians have played an active role in the formation of modern Iranian identity. How this happened?
It's mainly through several persons who have done this. So one of them, one of the most famous ones, was a man named Mirza Malcolm Khan, who, although he converted to Islam to further his own career, was still essentially an Armenian. The Armenian community still claims him. Articles that they write about him, don't refer to his conversion to Islam. And the Shia clerics don't like him. They refer to him as the atheist Armenian. But he was a strong advocate for reform and modernization in Iran, the introduction of the telegraph, Western-style schools, Western political institutions, and the idea of a constitution, for which he was exiled several times. And he had a strong input on the development of the idea of a standard language, a unified press, and a unified government, rather than a regional government that existed at the time, as well as a constitution, which then was very influential in the constitutional revolution that happened in 1905 in Iran, where Iran for the first time had a constitution. During that time, many Armenians were involved, particularly Armenians from the Tashnak Suchun party in Iran were actively involved in the constitutional revolution. Interestingly, it was happening at the same time that there were violence between Armenians and Azeris in the Russian Empire, whereas in Iran, the Tashnak Sutyun and the Iranian Social Democrats, which was an Azerbaijani ethnically political party, were in a coalition with one another in making sure that the constitutional revolution survived. And the leading figure of the constitutional revolution, Yeprem Khan, who was the chief of police of Tehran, was also Armenian. Now, Iranian Armenians have a very ambiguous attitude towards some of these people. Some of them want to celebrate them. Others say, well, Mirza Malcolm Khan, we understand that he kept his Armenian name, Malcolm. We understand that he married an Armenian woman. He is accused, his father, who also converted, was buried in an Armenian Christian cemetery. Malcolm Khan, bizarrely, even though he was Muslim, he married his wife in an Armenian church, and he was always accused of not really converting those around him. Other Iranian Armenians say, well, he converted, so he ceases to be Armenian, because you have to be Christian to be Armenian. And people like Yeprem Khan, they say, well, he was really a Russian Armenian. He wasn't an Iranian Armenian. However, throughout the 20th century, particularly in politically left-wing movements, Armenians were heavily involved in Iran. For example, the founder of the Iranian Communist Party was an Armenian, Avedis Soltanzadeh. Ardashir Ovanesyan, one of the senior members of the Tudeh Party, also a left-wing party, was an Armenian and eventually fled Iran and settled in Soviet Armenia. And many more were politically active or culturally active in defining Iranian identity, mainly in filmmaking. People like Samvel Khachikian, Varouz Karim Masihi, Arbi Avanesyan, these people made films about Iranian topics, which really helped define Iranian sense of identity, which transcended regional differences, linguistic differences, and so forth. Similarly, Armenians like Viken were central to the development of Iranian pop music. So in these different spaces, they played an active role. And again, one of the biggest areas, which is often unsung, where Armenians were important, and also Assyrian Christians, was in the development of roads and the truck driving industry, which brought Iranians from all sides of the country together for the first time and in contact with one another. So in multiple areas, they were involved in the development of Iranian national identity.
James, what makes Armenians survive for so long in Iran compared to other countries like Poland? Mm-hmm. Is it religion or there are other factors as well?
There are a number of factors. Religion is one of them, because intermarriage has usually meant, when people have intermarried, and it continues to be the case in Iran, they often find the community turns their back on them. And it's a very taboo issue, intermarriage. So that means that very often Armenians only marry other Armenians. It used to be more of a Christian identity. So Armenians and Assyrians intermarried, particularly in areas where Assyrians live, which is the northwest of Iran. But because Armenians were the main Christian group in Iran, they essentially had plenty of people to intermarry with across the country. Now, so that's one aspect. Another aspect is their proximity to the homeland, which in recent years has been even more pronounced. So now that Armenia is an independent state, it's very easy for them to visit Armenia. It's cheap because the wages are higher in Iran as well. It's easy for them to fly Armenians to Tehran to give public lectures, from intellectuals, from members of the government, also bringing sports people to Iran to compete from Armenia. So these have had a significant aspect. The clannishness of Iranian Armenians has also helped. But in comparison to, say, Lebanese Armenians, one of the interesting aspects of Iranian Armenian community, which has helped them to survive in their own way, is they've been really focused on developing community institutions that have a focus on Iranian Armenians. Now, the criticism that's come from some scholars, such as George Bonoutian, who himself is Iranian Armenian, was that they should have followed the Beirut model, which was more attempting to build an Armenian community that was prepared to return to their homeland. Of course, the nature of the Beirut community being genocide survivors
very, very different dynamic to the Iranian Armenian community, the majority of which didn't have a direct connection to the Armenian genocide. However, what this has meant is that you have all of these institutions in cities like Tehran, Tabriz, Isfahan, which cater for the Armenian community. And the church's role as a major landowner, being able to provide cheap rents to Armenian families with the intention of keeping them in Armenian neighbourhoods and keeping them from immigrating to the West, has also been important to maintaining their separateness. And of course, finally, most importantly, in the modern era, the Armenian school system, which has, for want of a better word, indoctrinated Armenians with a sense of separateness from the rest of the society, but also educated them in their language and history.
James, if we compare the Armenian and Irish cases, how Irish and Armenians in diaspora perceive their identities? Are there similarities?
There's similarities in the sense that there is an idea of a homeland. For the Irish, it's the island of Ireland. There also is a sense of colonialism and there being an enemy for the Armenians. That's the Ottoman Empire and the Turks. For the Irish, that was the British, who they felt tried to absorb them. And so there are some similarities in the two. There also is a similarity in the tension between people from the homeland and people in the diaspora. The diaspora of the Irish has been very strong in supporting causes which people in Ireland consider to be detrimental in some cases, particularly their support for the Irish Republican Army in Northern Ireland. Similarly, they often see them as, they call them plastic paddies, those in the diaspora. That is, on the surface, they pretend to be Irish, but in reality, they're American or Australian or something else. But this is a tension for some. There is also, of course, the emphasis on the Irish language, which is the same as the Armenian community, and there have been attempts to educate people in the Irish language and keep the language alive, which has been not really very successful. After a few generations, it disappears, mainly because people don't see a value in it. The other issue is the role of the church. The Catholic Church was very strong in the Irish community and was a strong foundation of keeping a separate identity and keeping an awareness of being Irish. Of course, as I mentioned before, since the 1960s, the church's power over the community has waned. Additionally, being a Catholic in Australia doesn't necessarily mean Irish anymore. There are Italians, there are Maltese, there are Filipinos, there are all sorts of people here now who are Catholic. So the nature of the church has also changed. But similar to the Armenian National Church, the Catholic Church played a big role in maintaining a separate identity in the diaspora.
James, about your book. What's the subject and when it's going to be ready?
So the book is called Religion and Identity in Iran, Armenian Christians in the Islamic Republic. And it's about essentially that, the place of religion and also ethnicity and identity in Iran, the debates around it, but looking specifically at the Armenian community's complex relationship with Iranian identity. It's based on fieldwork that I've done in Iran over the past 5-6 years, and it's currently about to go for review. I've found a publisher who's interested, so I'm just finalising the manuscript to send to them, hopefully by the end of the month. And it will take 1 or 2 years before it's published. But essentially, it's looking at multiple areas that are concerning the Armenian community of Iran. Primarily, their relationship to Iran and identity, but also the role of the church, the schools, and the genocide narrative in formulating a sense of Armenianness and a sense of Armenian responsibility to one another within Tehran today. Similarly, there are subjects on the laws of the Islamic Republic and how they define Armenians as separate from the rest of the population. Looking at how Armenians see themselves in relation to other Iranians, the way they stereotype themselves as being more honest, but also a clannish, cold and closed community. Looking at the way they perform on their identities, the debates that they use to they have within the community about their belonging. So, for example, today in Tehran, there's a lot of discussion about the Armenian accent. Many people who grow up in Tehran speak Persian with an Armenian accent. And some members of the community see this as a bit of a disgrace, considering they're growing up in a Persian-speaking city. Why do they not speak it like a native Persian? But those that do have the accent point to the Armenian school system, which means that they grow up only with Armenian friends speaking Armenian, so they end up speaking Persian with an accent. Also looking at the way they define themselves by their activities as opposed to Muslims, such as in drinking alcohol, their attitudes towards veiling. And finally, it finishes with a discussion on the issue of immigration, the large number that are leaving Iran, and for such a small community, what the future of the community holds, considering that, that a lot of the younger people move abroad to study and never return.
James, thank you very much for the interview. Looking forward for the book.
Thank you, Vahir.